This is Maryland Morning on 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast. You're listening to The Lines Between Us. It's been 50 years since the Supreme Court established a right to counsel in all criminal cases in the case Gideon v. Wainwright, even when the defendant can't afford an attorney. Today we want to consider, how well is that access working? How much time do public defenders have for the people they represent? How many poor defendants stay out of jail compared to those who hire their own lawyers? Does it play out differently for whites and minorities? And how do the poor fare in civil cases where there's no guaranteed right to counsel? With me to discuss this is Paul DeWolf, public defender for the state of Maryland. Thanks for being here.
It's good to be here. Thank you.
And also with us is Pamela Ortiz, executive director of the Maryland Access to Justice Commission. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
And on the line from Davis, California, is Gabriel Chin, professor of law at the University of California, Davis. Hello.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Now, Paul DeWolf, you oversee all the public defenders in the state of Maryland. Tell me what the average day is like for one of your lawyers.
Well, it depends on which level of the court system that we're talking about. The public defender's office represents people in juvenile court, in misdemeanor court, which is in Maryland the district court, in felonies, which in Maryland is the circuit court. We also do appeals, and we represent parents in abuse and neglect cases. We represent people in post-convictions. But in terms of overall caseloads, I think Maryland is perhaps no different than many states across the country and many jurisdictions across the country, because not all jurisdictions have statewide public defender's office. And that is that we have too many cases, too few lawyers, and too few resources to do the work that we're constitutionally mandated to do. Having said that, we have 570 lawyers in Maryland. They work public defenders. They work very hard. They're very dedicated to providing quality representation to their clients. To answer your specific question, let me take a district court lawyer, for example. They, on average, represent anywhere from 10 to 25 cases per day.
Gabriel Chin, you've just published a research paper, Race and the Disappointing Right to Counsel, that makes the point in passing that minorities are more likely than whites to be convicted of drug offenses in the U.S. and more likely than whites to be sentenced to prison if they are convicted. Is any of this traceable to the kind of representation that they get in the courtrooms across this country?
Well, I think to some extent it is. There's no question that better counsel in criminal cases would be very important, worthwhile. It would make a difference in a lot of individual cases. On the other hand, even if we came up with a public defense system where people who couldn't afford counsel had very, very good lawyers across the board, I still don't think that would do much to change the racial disparity in the prison population. African Americans are, you know, depending on the jurisdiction, overrepresented in the prison system by a factor of 3, 4, 5 times as many as they are in the general population. I don't think that lawyers really are going to be able to solve that problem. And the reason for that is lawyers can do a couple of things for you. They can help defeat the case. They can try it to an acquittal, or they can get it dismissed somehow on some legal ground. Or more typically, they can get you a favorable exercise of discretion in some sort of negotiated disposition of the case. Most criminal cases wind up pleading guilty. Of the something like 1 million people who are convicted of a felony every year, it simply cannot be the case that 30 or 40 or 50% of them are completely innocent. They got the wrong person. And if only we had more lawyer time, the lawyer would be able to show the court or the jury or the prosecution that this is simply a miscarriage of justice. There certainly are innocent people convicted of felonies and misdemeanors, but the vast majority of them are guilty. And there's not a lot that lawyers can do about the fact that in the last 40 years or 30 years or 50 years, the United States has developed a taste for prison, the public policy direction of putting more people in prison for longer sentences, and there's not much a defense lawyer can do about the fact that a lot of the crimes that are most enthusiastically enforced in recent years, most particularly drug offenses, are crimes that have radical racial disproportionality.
I want to get back to that. I want to pull Pamela Ortiz into this conversation, though. First of all, tell us, what is the Maryland Access to Justice Commission?
The commission is an entity that was appointed by Chief Judge Bell, Maryland, the Chief Judge of Maryland's Court of Appeals, in 2008 to focus on enhancing access to the courts and legal services for the poor and for people who face barriers in trying to solve a civil legal problem. For ordinary Marylanders, few of them understand or think about the difference between a criminal and a civil matter. And since we're talking about right to counsel today, in that context, many Marylanders would be surprised to realize that if they were to go to court and their right to parent a child is at risk because they're involved in a custody matter with their other parent, or if their safety is at risk because they're a victim of domestic violence and they're seeking civil protection, or their housing is at risk in a matter with a landlord, for example, they do not have a right to a court-appointed, state-funded lawyer if they cannot afford one. They certainly can be represented, but if they cannot afford the lawyer, no lawyer will be appointed to represent them. One of the responses we're looking at and talking about is whether you should have a right to counsel in civil cases where your basic human needs are at stake. There are some civil cases where you can usually get a lawyer. If you are involved in a case where you're suing someone for money damages, there are monies that will be available at the end of the case from which the lawyer can be paid. So we're not talking about those kind of cases. But we're talking about cases that involve housing, sustenance, safety, health, child custody, those kinds of issues where you as an individual might think, gosh, there's so much at stake. I really wish I had a lawyer.
This is The Lines Between Us on Maryland Morning on 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast. I'm speaking with Pamela Ortiz, Executive Director of the Maryland Access to Justice Commission, with Paul DeWolf, Public Defender for the State of Maryland, and Professor Gabriel Chin, Professor of Law at the University of California, Davis. We're talking about access to lawyers in the courts. The General Assembly passed a bill creating a task force that would examine how civil Gideon might work in Maryland. Tell me more about that.
Sure. Well, we looked at not whether you have the right, but if a right were established, or if Maryland determined this was important and we wanted to create a program to provide counsel to people in these civil matters, what would that look like? It seemed appropriate to broaden the conversation. So the commission, through the Maryland Judiciary, successfully pursued the passage of a bill to create a task force. The task force will spend a year looking at this issue for Maryland and how we might accomplish it. It would be expensive to expand the right to meet everyone's needs. There's so much at stake for families, though, in these matters. And it really ties in to the cycle of poverty you were talking about that's triggered in the criminal matter. Indigent families are on the margins. There's just a thin line between whether you thrive and whether you dive, right? Even many moderate-income families are only a paycheck away from real trouble and real chaos. So if you can provide someone a lawyer to allow them to enforce their rights to fair housing and to fair treatment by their landlord, you can preserve their ability to thrive. An individual or a family, perhaps, that has been wrongfully deprived of their security deposit, that $1,000, that $1,500 might make a huge difference to that family, without which they couldn't make a car payment and get to work or have clothes to send their kids to school. And so providing representation in these core key matters that matter so much for families can help them thrive and avoid that cycle of despair that happens when families on the margins are wrongfully deprived.
I want to talk about people who are in the middle, who don't qualify for public defender or for legal aid, but maybe have a hard time affording private counsel. Where are they in this picture? How could they be helped? Or is that just more than we can do?
Well, excuse me, a lot of the bar associations have set up programs for people who are underserved, whether it's in the civil arena or in the criminal arena, where they have pro bono programs where attorneys can volunteer to represent people, or they have reduced fee programs so that an individual can call into the Bar Association and get referred to a lawyer for what would be considered to be a reduced fee. But actually, especially during the past 4 years, during the recession, more and more people are falling below the lines where they can afford adequate legal help for criminal cases, for civil cases, and it's become a particular problem. Our caseload, even though crime is down, arrests are down, our caseload has increased by 15% in the last 4 years. Part of it is due to a court case in the state of Maryland, OPD versus state, which expanded the definition of indigency. We've increased our caseload, but a lot of it is just because more and more people are falling below the margins and are unable to afford counsel for any kind of case.
Many middle-income people will never be able to afford, in a criminal case, the kind of representation that an indigent person gets for free from a good public defender's office. You may be talking tens of thousands of dollars for a felony of medium seriousness, and a good public defender's office will provide those services for free. Middle-income people may be just out of luck.
On the civil side, the goals of the commission is to really develop a healthy civil legal services delivery system that meets people's needs in a variety of ways so that you can use the best resource in the best situation. I mentioned that we have self-help centers in family law. We also have a statewide district court self-help center that people can get help in a district court matter, landlord-tenant, small claims, domestic violence. There's a walk-in center in Glen Burnie, and there's help via live chat and via telephone. But also there are other promising practices. One of those is what may happen with the practice of law. As the legal marketplace changes, lawyers may have an opportunity to market themselves in a way that people can better understand and afford. One of the reforms we've been working on is limited scope representation, where a lawyer might be able to offer their services in discrete pieces. Many individuals find they can hire a lawyer for a portion of the case, not all, and limited scope representation allows the client and the lawyer to sit down and decide which tasks the lawyer will handle and which tasks the client can handle on their own. That way a client can determine what they can afford. They may be able to pay a flat fee or a limited fee for a particular service and know what they'll be hiring that lawyer to do, and then do the rest on their own. It's something that's not for everyone, but for a moderate income client, it might be an appropriate solution to providing some of the services that they need.
Professor Tin, you said in your article that there really isn't anything in access to justice of the order of Brown versus Board of Education and the changes that it wrought in access to education. What can we do, in your view?
The court, or more likely the state legislatures and Congress, have to be serious about the idea of not having drastic differences in outcome in criminal cases based on how much money somebody has. And things like pretrial detention, that $75 or $250 can mean the difference between somebody being detained for months before trial and perhaps ultimately being acquitted, or alternatively perhaps being forced to take a plea bargain that they don't really want to take, but they will be able to walk out of court that day, and so therefore they feel enormous pressure to do it. There has to be a real commitment to the idea that the quality of justice that somebody receives in our courts shouldn't depend on how much money they have. And that was the idea behind Gideon versus Wainwright, but it was a baby step in that direction. There hasn't really been that much since to pursue the idea. But the bottom line is that in our system, having money can really impact the direction of the case. In my view, the only major way that that's going to change, I don't foresee massive infusions of money, doubling or tripling the amount of money that is spent on public defense, state-funded bail programs. Maybe there can be reforms around the edges in bail, but I don't foresee huge, enormous investments in those areas. To me, the fundamental question is, do we want to have so many arrests? Do we want to have so many prosecutions? Do we want to have so many people in prison? And that's the end that has to be worked on. I think that conversation is beginning, that maybe as a share of the economy, there's just too much investment, too much commitment to prison, and that if we came to the conclusion that that money would be better spent on other things, crime prevention, education, that would have the effect of taking some of the burden off people of color and the poor.
Paul DeWolf, well, earlier when we talked about how overworked your public defenders are, I didn't really tie it into the budget. You get a budget from the state of Maryland,
correct?
Which is probably not as big as you'd like it to be. But in this frame of, are we committed to justice for everybody? Is Maryland living up to its obligations?
No, and I don't think any state really is living up to its obligation. Remember that the right to counsel is a constitutional right. It's not only guaranteed by Gideon versus Wainwright, but it's built into the Sixth Amendment, which means that the government really needs to fund it. It needs to provide the resources so that attorneys don't have to handle 15 to 20 cases a day or 500 felonies a year, so that they have time to prepare the cases to work with the clients.
What would it take for you to feel like the scales are equal?
Well, I think if you, for example, if you tied resources to caseload standards. We've developed caseload standards in Maryland for juvenile court, for district court, and for felony court. And if when our caseloads got above those standards, we had some ability to either get more resources or to send the cases to another panel like they do in the federal system. In the federal system, there are two, I think, model public defender's office. One is PDS in D.C., and the other is the federal public defenders. And they have caseload control. So when their attorneys reach a certain number of cases, then the rest of the cases go to a well-funded CJA panel. Our state and many other states across the country don't have that fail-safe method, so that we have to take all of the cases that come in with the current resources. So it's a matter of funding it. It's a matter of providing the resources, and it is a matter of paying attention to caseload controls. And I'd like to say one thing about something the professor said that I think we can really agree on, and that is a decriminalization of some of the low-level offensive would go a long way to cutting down on our caseloads, cutting down on the court's time, cutting down on the prison beds, and it would save enormous amounts of money. Just two offenses, for example, if they decriminalize possessions of low levels of marijuana like they have in Colorado and in Washington, our caseloads would go down to a level that may be reasonable for some of our attorneys in district court in Baltimore City, for example. If they decriminalize some of the traffic offenses for which they're locking people up, mainly immigrants because they're not able to get driver's license. That would cut down on cost to the court.
I think I need to let all of you go. Thank you very, very much for discussing this. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Gabriel Chin is a professor of law at University of California, Davis. Paul DeWolf is the public defender for the state of Maryland. Pamela Ortiz is executive director of the Maryland Access to Justice Commission. That's it for the Lines Between Us today. More of this interview at linesbetweenus.org, including a discussion of what lawyers can do to affect their clients' outcomes and how that may play out differently for black and white defendants. I'm Sheila Cast. Ahead on Maryland Morning, Tom Hall talks to Rain Pryor about her latest projects. Stay with us on 88.1.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Lines Between Us, WYPR's year-long exploration of inequality in the Baltimore region. This is Maryland Morning senior producer Lawrence Lanahan. Now, join the conversation at facebook.com/thelinesbetweenus. Or tell us your story at linesbetweenus.org. The Lines Between Us is made possible by grants from Associated Black Charities, Cohen Opportunity Fund, Ethics and Excellence in Journalism Foundation, Baltimore Community Foundation, and Open Society Institute Baltimore, as well as support from members of the WYPR Board of Directors. I hope you'll join us again on Friday at 9 a.m. on 88.1 FM in the Baltimore region, and everywhere else, streaming live at wypr.org. Have a great day.